What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, back from a mini vacation of one day yesterday. Elliott Wolf, my co-host.
You didn't even get a day.
No.
Because we talked to you yesterday.
That's true. I was on the show yesterday. Yeah. That's true. Josh Elliott Wolf, my co-host for today. You just heard him on Canucks Brunch. So Josh continues to put a shift in here over the last couple of extremely newsworthy days for the Vancouver Canucks. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And, of course, we heard from Adam Foote and Patrick Alvin. Foote, of course, the new head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Lots to dig into there. We can play some clips from Foote as well because I think he had some pretty interesting things to say about his experiences, his resume, his philosophy for the team going forward as well. We are, I believe, going to try to connect with Thomas Drantz. Do we have him ready? Okay. In fact, we have Thomas Drantz, who, of course, the regular co-host on this show, who also covers the team for The Athletic. And he joins us now from the sunny beaches of Jamaica. Drantz, what's going on, man?
Yeah, we'll see how much trouble I get in from my family. I happened to come back to my room just in time to get a text message from Lena asking me if I'd be available to join. Of course, I said yes. I'd love to chat.
Yes.
But yeah, the more time I spend away, the more trouble I get into. But look, this is a big news day that I happened to miss out on.
Uh-huh.
I wrote a column on a bus that was being I'm just going to say it, flat out hotboxed, not by me, but on my way from the airport in whatever it was to wherever it was, 2-hour bus ride. I wrote a column from there for The Athletic. Classic take vacation and huge news breaks the next day, Jamie.
Yeah, absolutely. So if there's any weird things about that column, people now have the explanation for why it was a little off.
There's nothing weird about that column.
All right.
It was perfect.
Of course, just like every column. By the way, guest on Sports at 650, call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. So how much did you get a chance to either listen to Adam Foote at his introductory press conference or at least see, the tweets that were out there and some of the quotes? Did you get a chance to interpret much of what he had to say?
I did. I saw much of it.
Okay.
When I got back to my room this afternoon. And look, I think there's a element to which, we're in for something very different than what we were used to with the openness, right, and the willingness to elaborate that Tocchet brought to his scrums. And I don't think it's just the media side of it in which Foote's going to be different. I do think one area that the Canucks are going to, and I don't want to say miss Tocchet, but one area where I'm curious to see how Adam Foote sort of steps up here. And I know this is difficult to say given how this season unfolded and given all of the fissures that were revealed within that Canucks locker room over the course of the season. But I think it was so much worse than the public realizes between, the Canucks players, that even though I believe and rate Tocchet as a special coach from a man management emotional quotient perspective, I think he's high end EQ from the perspective of relating to his players. And the fact that, nonetheless, this blew up under him, I think more than anything shines a spotlight on just how intractable the situation was in terms of how this core related to each other and interacted with each other and brought out the best or not of each other. And I do think that's sort of one element of this coming out of that press conference where, we heard Foote's answer on Elias Pettersson, for example, which felt like an endorsement, I think it's fair to say. But I do think there's going to be a not a drop off, but a difference in approach. And I do think it's going to be fascinating to watch and sort of see, how Foote's able to replace that part of what Tocchet brought. And I thought brought at a really high level to the Canucks over the course of the last you know, 2.5 seasons during his tenure here, because I still think that's a challenge, right? We still talk about this group, and whether we're talking about, you know, Quinn Hughes' future or Thatcher Demko's availability, and perhaps the need to manage his workload differently to make sure that he's available when it counts. Elias Pettersson's, you know, completely mystifying deterioration as a star player. Like, there's a lot of big-ticket items that are going to require a fair bit of, you know, calculated motivation, calculated work from the perspective of the new head coach. I don't think we have a sense or got a sense today necessarily of how Adam Foote is going to go about doing that, but we certainly, I think, got a sense that it's going to look and feel different than it did under Tocchet.
You mentioned Elias Pettersson, and that was obviously a focus for a lot of people, what Adam Foote had to say about Elias Pettersson and his approach with Pettersson. I believe in the direct quote, he mentioned support 3 times. Is that what did you think of the answer on Pettersson and how Foote's going to approach things with him?
Yeah, and, you know, like, for example, let me, there's been a lot of talk, for example, about Quinn Hughes' answer about having Elias Pettersson or hosting Elias Pettersson to work out with him in Michigan. And I think there's been an interpretation in the market that Hughes didn't seem interested in that, right? And that maybe that's a sign of where their relationship is at or what have you. And I never got a chance to talk about this on Canucks Talk when I was hosting, but I'm going to use this opportunity to do so. I actually think what I read into Hughes's answer on that was a dismissal of the notion that Pettersson needs to be babysat, right? Like, I actually got from that answer, for example, that Quinn Hughes gave at locker room cleanout day, an indicator of the respect that Hughes wants to afford a teammate as opposed to anything else. Like, I trust him to do the work. He doesn't need to be babysat by me. Why are you even asking that? Right? And so I suppose that could be in line with what Foote is getting at. I do think it's fair to suggest that by the time we got to, honestly, probably for sure, by the time we got to the end of Tockett's tenure, I think it's fair to suggest that Tockett wasn't a firm believer in Pettersson's ability to lead a winning team. But I think it may extend even further back than that. And so the use of the word support, and I think you're right to focus in on that as a sort of loaded term, I think that reflects perhaps Foote's understanding that his success is going to be tied to Pettersson here. That if Pettersson doesn't hit his ceiling, there's not a real way forward for this team to reemerge or get back on track as anything like a contending team. And so we're going to support him. We're going to figure out how to get him back to that level. I think makes a ton of sense as an approach for Foote, especially in a world where this team's not going to be aggressively exploring their options on Pettersson this summer, which, you know, we'll see. I'm not 100% convinced that that's exactly how this will play out over the course of the next 2 months, but that's sort of what I read into it, was that at the very least, Foote has a clear-eyed view that in order to succeed in this job, he's going to have to get the most out of his best players. And by the way, I'd add, I do think the organization, once Tocchet left, did sort of see this dynamic where we trust that Tocchet will have an organized defensive team that plays with structure and that gives us some level of predictability in terms of work rate and, you know, a floor effectively as a baseline. But we note that, and the team would understand that, in fact, the best players on the team didn't necessarily play to the level that they need to going forward. And one thing I think that loomed large in their thinking throughout this coaching search was, who's the guy that can get the best out of our best players? And, you know, the fact that they decided on Foote, and I have no sort of intel that would suggest that that was a major motivator in selecting Foote specifically, but I do know that that was looming large in their thinking once Tocchet departed. So the fact that they settled on Foote tells me, or at least implies to me, that they think that's one of the main reasons, one of the main calling cards one of the main justifications for why Foote is the 22nd head coach of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and even beyond the specifics on the answer on Elias Pettersson, I just thought it was kind of the most positive, maybe the gentlest answer on Pettersson we've had from either a coach or a member of management from the Canucks in like at least a year, right? It was the easiest one to listen to and get a sense of positivity from. From Alvin Rutherford talking again in at least a year. So I wonder if it's just a different approach publicly, because I think to the end of Tockett's tenure, you know, you increasingly had to do less reading between the lines to get a sense of the criticism of Elias Pettersson. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was just more and more explicit towards the end. So whether the internal approach is that different, and we'll see how it is, and it very well could be, I wonder if part of this is also just like, let's try to keep some of this business a little bit, you know, behind closed doors more than it was last year.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. I'd add this, like, Pettersson's a proud guy, you know, and for example, the questions about his weight earlier on in his career that he hated, that you could see the loathing on his face whenever he was asked about his size. Like, why did he hate those questions so much? The reason is that the implication that he took from it is that I don't belong in this league. Right. And he was convinced that he did. Not only was he convinced that he did, but he was convinced that he could be a star player capable of matching up against the top performers and on and on, despite his size or whatever his size was. Like, the size wasn't relevant. The fact is that I'm really good at hockey, right? There's an element of pride. And I can't imagine, you know, and granted, I've had fewer and fewer conversations with him about this as things have spiraled for obvious reasons. But I can't imagine that the last 14 months have done anything but wound that. And then you throw on top of it the way that the team has talked about him publicly. You know, I'm sure this is a reality check for him. And it has to be. I mean, it has to be. He has to be so much better. But also, I don't know that you'll ever get sort of apex Pettersson out of him if you're, you know, sort of talking about him the way that this organization has. Like, mm-hmm. He needs to be trusted. He needs to be counted on materially if you're going to get the best out of him. And clearly this club hasn't. So changing tack, I think, makes sense at this moment in sort of the team's history and the team's relationship with Pettersson.
And something else that Patrick Alvin mentioned in the press release yesterday announcing Adam Foote was the stressing that he already has these relationships built in with the players. We heard that again today, and Adam Foote even going on to say, you know, I'm very familiar with the players. He understands how they want to be treated, what makes them tick, and that's going to be a big advantage for him. And I think we've tended to focus on the relationship with Quinn Hughes in that regard, but I wonder how much of that also applies to Elias Pettersson, having that built-in credibility that he might have with Elias Pettersson. But just in general, that focus on the importance of the established relationships and Foote's ability to build relationships with the players, how important was that in the Canucks deciding to name Adam Foote their next head coach?
Oh, it was vital. It was vital. And more than that, the presence that Foote has, right? Like, this is a guy with presence immediately. Not just because, you know, like the old quote about George Washington, I think it was from his first vice president, John Adams, was that guy's so tall, he was going to end up leading something eventually. Right. And that's sort of the idea that Adam Foote has, that sort of natural presence. He walks in a room and you listen because of who he is and the sort of the figure that he cuts. And I think that was a big part of this for the Canucks and for Jim Rutherford. And you know, I sort of keep coming back to the Brind'Amour model because I think that loomed large in the organization's thinking as to sort of Foote's bona fides. This sort of idea that, having watched Brind'Amour be an assistant coach across a similar timeline, Rutherford sort of left Carolina and Brind'Amour waited 4 more years before he got a chance to replace Bill Peters in midseason in 2018. But I think that process would have been accelerated significantly if Rutherford had never left for Western Pennsylvania and multiple Stanley Cup wins with Sidney Crosby and company. And, you know, not that this is a chance to like right some wrongs or do things differently, but I think that experience really informed the Canucks' decision here. And so I think it's that presence, that familiarity. I think both of those factors played a significant role in Foote being the choice in this process.
So now the attention around the coaching staff shifts to what they do with the assistants and rounding it out. Is there a way you think they should go about it? Like a certain type of coach that you would identify as an ideal fit to work with Adam Foote?
Yeah. So Foote, I heard specifically name check like an offensive coach and a defensive coach, he's going to need to find his guy. Like, that's first and foremost. You need your guy. I think every head coach needs a guy that at the end of a bad day or at the end of a bad performance, you can go into a room, close the door and vent and have it out and like really scheme with nothing being off the table and 100% trust between a coach and an assistant, figure out what the way forward is. So first and foremost, I think he's going to have to find his guy. I don't know who his guy is going to be, right? He was Rick Tocchet's guy. Like, that was the role that he served on the Canucks coaching staff the last 2.5 seasons. He's going to need his guy. And I think that guy, more than anything, more than their defensive bona fides or their offensive bona fides or anything they do from an X's and O's perspective, 100% locked in trust between Foot and that person is what you have to have in that role. And the other role, that's sort of one where I think the other guy is the guy where you look for head coaching experience, someone who's, you know, worn a bunch of different hats, someone who, you know, really has familiarity with sort of the day-to-day of being a head coach, especially since Foot has never been a professional head coach at any level, right? So that's going to be vital. So that's sort of how I would look out for the Canucks building their staff. You need one guy that is Foot's guy who he trusts implicitly. And whatever portfolio that guy has, whether it's the power play, whether it's the PK and running the defense, like, Foot needs to be in lockstep with that person, and they need to have 100% trust with Foot. And then the other person is sort of going to be the person who's a little more experienced, can be a little more experienced, and should have sort of the opposite portfolio, given sort of Foot's suggestion of an offensive and defensive coach to fill out his staff. Of Foot's guy. So for me, that's sort of what's next. And I can tell you for sure that making this decision proactively, picking their guy once they felt comfortable that Foot was it, that Foot was the choice, part of the reason that the Canucks wanted to be ahead of the cycle was to have more options, more ability to sort of guide the process in terms of filling out their backroom staff or filling out their bench staff. Once the head coach is settled. So the Canucks want to have sort of their line in the pond early and before other teams are thinking about it. It was a major reason why the club expedited the conclusion of this process.
I feel like I'm just going to be spending the rest of the day looking through like old Colorado Avalanche rosters, trying to figure out who's Rob Blake's, or not who Rob Blake, who's Adam's Foot's guy going to be. Maybe Rob Blake. He's out of work right now.
He's free.
Yeah, he's available. But we'll see. We'll see if it's a former teammate that turns up on the staff. Other piece of big news, of course, from yesterday, Tom Volander signs his ELC. No trip to Abbotsford forthcoming, it seems like, for Volander. He'll be at training camp next season for the Canucks. Your reaction, Drance, to this deal getting done after several weeks of kind of bizarre delay in the process?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a real compromise, doesn't it? Don't you think that's fair to say, given what we've seen of the Schedule A bonus numbers? So the Canucks did not ultimately hold completely hard and fast into their sort of posture, which was, hey, we have this path forward. It's a narrow path forward. This is what it takes to be a Vancouver Canuck, and this is why. It seems like they met in the middle. They didn't, you know, the Blander camp didn't cave entirely, and the Canucks also didn't cave entirely, and they both sort of got some of what each side wanted. And I think that makes sense as a conclusion, but it does sort of, I think, highlight the cost of this delay. Like, the cost of this delay is 10 playoff games in Abbotsford to this point, right? Those would be the first professional games that Volander ever played. And given Volander's draft pedigree, given what he's accomplished at various levels, including the World Junior level, including the college level, I mean, there's a chance that he would have been not just top four, but maybe top pair for Abbotsford and have had those 10 games of seasoning and then be looking at, you know, an additional anywhere from 4 to perhaps 14 games of additional professional seasoning before the fall in the highest stakes games of the year. To me, that's value. Like, to me, that's value lost while the Canucks sort of drew a line in the sand that they ultimately didn't entirely enforce, but also enforced to some extent. I don't understand the reasoning for that. But again, you know, I have some respect for a team trying to sort of build their own way forward, their own developmental path. It's not how I would do business personally. But I at least am going to sort of couch my criticism in an understanding that there might be a purpose to this, and that I do think this organization's done a decent job of player development under new management, with a few exceptions like the silly Todd Colson standing out to me. So I don't know. It just feels like a missed opportunity to me, Jamie. Like, I just feel like having Volander get that American League playoff seasoning and getting this deal done, even if it costs you an extra $25,000 to $50,000 a year in Schedule A bonuses, money you probably won't even ever have to pay out to a defensive defenseman, frankly. I find that difficult to swallow, because I feel like Volander's chances of making this team and making an impact right off the bat next season would be greater if he'd got the chance to play 10 to 25 games of American League playoff hockey this spring.
Well, I had to laugh because yesterday in the statement, Alvin says now's the perfect time for Volander to turn pro. I was like, I feel like the perfect time would have been a month ago when he could have joined the Abbotsford Canucks. But
sure,
I guess this was next best, but I don't know about perfect time.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I also think it makes, you know, the truth is about Volander, right, is there's going to be some work required. You know, like, the club is pretty confident that he can step into an NHL role. Like, he's going to show up at training camp with an inside track to be on their third pair, right? I think the truth is that if you draw it up on a whiteboard in Adam Foote's office and get the nod from Foote, I think it's something like, you know, Hughes and Myers, Pettersson and Hronek, there's two Pettersons.
There's three Pettersons.
Marcus Pettersson and Blander.
Yeah.
I know, but I'm talking about just the D.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when I said Pettersson, I got confused. But yeah, two Pettersons on the left side, Hronek, and then, but you know, the idea of matching a young Swedish defense prospect with more veteran defenders, putting Myers with Hughes, you know, that gives you nice balance. And then, like, at the end of the day, on a key offensive zone draw, it's going to be Hughes and Hronek, right? When you're chasing a lead, it's going to be various guys. When you're holding a lead, maybe the rookies play a little bit less, on and on. And I think that makes a ton of sense. Like, I think that's going to be the inside track. So I think Volander's going to have an inside track to earn a regular NHL spot coming out of training camp next season. And yet, you know, his puck skills are going to need some work. His offensive instincts are still very much a work in progress, especially for a player with his draft pedigree. I mean, this is not, in my opinion, a ready-made star-level defenseman who's just going to come in on day one and dominate. They're especially, like, he can do it in terms of his skating. I think he can do it in terms of his defensive conscientiousness, but adding that more dynamic attacking contributor level to his game, being the sort of player that you can play with Quinn Hughes as the organization thinks about it, I think that's going to take some development time and some work, and it's just regrettable in my mind that development time and work didn't start a month ago, especially given what players can draw from and improve on over the course of, like, the highest leverage, highest stakes games of the year down in the American League during the Calder Cup playoffs.
Drance, we appreciate it, man. Enjoy Jamaica. Enjoy those bus rides, and we'll let you get back to your family.
Thanks, boys. Be well.
That is Thomas Drance, who, of course, usually co-hosts this show. He's on vacation right now, doing us a solid and calling in, and he covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of reaction coming in to the Adam Foote hire, and, of course, what we heard from the press conference with Adam Foote earlier today as well. We'll continue to dive into that. I want to talk more about his answer on Elias Pettersson, as you brought up with Drance, Josh, because I think a really fascinating insight into what might look different under Adam Foote for this team next year. We can talk about what he had to say about the team's offensive struggles and a lot more on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Call him on a bus that was being, like, I'm just gonna say it, like, flat out hotboxed, not by me.
Feeling hot, hot, hot. Feeling hot.